This morning, I would like you to turn your Bibles to the book of Proverbs. Proverbs in the Old Testament. It is page 657 if you're using the Pew Bible. Proverbs 31. Did I mention the chapter? It's Proverbs 31. It's the last chapter of Proverbs. Believe it or not, I've been in the ministry for over 30 years, and I've never preached on this passage. Not an easy passage to preach. But this week, that's the assignment I got, and this is the passage I'm preaching on. Proverbs 31, I'd like you to follow in your Bibles as I read this magnificent poem. Notice, it's from verses 10 to 31. It's 21 verses long. That is because there are 21 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. The author has taken, he's written an acrostic poem, so that the first verse begins with A, and the second verse begins with B, and so forth. It's A to Z in Hebrew. Proverbs 31, verse 10. A wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. She selects wool and flax and works with eager hands. She is like the merchant ships, bringing her food from afar. She gets up while it is still dark. She provides food for her family and portions for her servant girls. You might wish you had some servant girls to give portions to, but this is another culture, and she had servant girls to give portions to. She considers a field and buys it. Out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. She sees that her trading is profitable, and her lamp does not go out at night. In her hand, she holds the distaff and grasps the spindle with her fingers. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. When it snows, this is good for Oneana. When it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for her bed. She is clothed in fine linen and purple. Her husband is respected at the city gate, where he takes his seat among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies the merchants with sashes. She is clothed with strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come. She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. She watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children arise and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the reward she has earned, and let her works bring her praise at the city gate. That's Z. We've gone from A to Z. A JCPenney television ad says, she works hard and sacrifices 364 days a year. You only have one day to show your thanks, so make the most of it. Get over to Penny's and buy and buy jewelry and clothing, and we have cameras available too. Well, it's a marketing ploy. It's nonsense, of course. We don't have only one day to show her that we appreciate her. We have 365. In leap year, we have 366. But the tragedy is, the danger is, that often we don't show our appreciation or our thanks. It is very easy to take those who are very, the closest to us, very special to us, essential to us, to take them for granted, and to fail to give thanks or express our appreciation as we should. That's the danger. Mom needs to know that she is appreciated. And so we want to say Happy Mother's Day today. And that's the reason why we have left the book of Revelation and are examining this poem on this Sunday. As the book of Proverbs concludes, an anonymous poet writes a poem as I've indicated, it's an acrostic poem that celebrates the influence and the impact of a godly woman, his wife, in his family. I want to suggest that it is written as a thank you note. That is, it's an appreciative acknowledgement of how much she enriches his life. And he wants her to know. And so he writes this poem. Let me suggest an interpretive note for you men. It might be easy for us to say, well, this is a poem about women. I'm not going to listen. It doesn't apply to me. But you know, we are constantly assuming and asking the women of the church to apply masculine language to themselves. Proverbs 1:10, for example, says, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not give in to them." Of course, we say that applies to women as well. Even though it says, "My son," it includes daughters. And there is a lot of masculine language that we assume that women apply to themselves. And so this morning it's important, men, that we apply this poem and the principles that it expresses to us as well. Not the details. There are a lot of details that certainly don't apply directly to us, but the principles that emerge from the text do apply to us and ought to be applied to us as well. The text indicates that she is completely trustworthy. I want you to look at verse 11, and I want to suggest another translation of verse 11. The NIV says her husband has full confidence in her. I think it would be better translated, her husband trusts her completely. It is not so much a matter of having confidence in her abilities or skills. It is rather that he trusts in her as a person. Her husband trusts her completely is the meaning of the phrase. And if you check a whole host of other translations, you'll find that that's the way it's translated. The NIV, I think, missed it here. The word that is used here is the very same word that appears in Proverbs 3:5. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. That's the same word. And I think that's the way it should be translated here. Her husband trusts her completely. He trusts her with his life, with all that he has. He trusts her with his children, with everything. He trusts her completely. It strikes me how far removed this is from the prenuptial agreements of our culture. You know, we have to before we get married, we have to write down all the legal niceties and protect our assets and in case this doesn't work. Light years removed from that. Her husband trusts her completely. She is completely worthy of trust. Trust means that nothing is allowed to ever come between you, whether it's money or another person or a hobby or anything. Nothing ever comes between you. I trust her completely. You can see, men, how this easily applies to us. She trusts him completely, totally. It's total trust. I once was counseling with a couple many years ago in a totally different city. No, none of you could ever know these people. And, you know, his attitude was, well, her money is hers and my money is mine. The only thing is, he made about 10 times as much as she did. And, you know, money was destroying their relationship. And we've all known of any number of circumstances where other things come between the couple. And there's not total trust. And the result is damage and destruction. Well, the poet celebrates his wife. Her husband trusts her completely. It's total trust in this relationship. And the passage emphasizes, says it again and again in different ways, she works hard caring for her family. She is diligent and hardworking. Up at dawn, she works into the night. Her arms are strong, her fingers skilled. She sews, manages her household. She clothes the kids. She makes quilts. She's an entrepreneur, buying and selling. And I'm tired just reading it, just trying to summarize it. As you read this passage, that's one of the great emphases of the passage. She's very hardworking in caring for her family. She does it all. And this sounds scary. Almost sounds scary. It sounds perfectionistic. And you ask yourself, how are you to interpret this? How do you to understand this? I mean, is this sort of a manual for young women as they look toward marriage and they're supposed to learn from this poem? Is that the way we're to see it? Or is it a, you know, something of a profile of a godly Christian wife? Or is it a courtship guide for young men seeking a wife? Well, it gets used in all of those ways. I did a Bible study of Proverbs when I was looking for my wife. So it gets used in that way, in all of those ways, but perhaps it is really a thank you note. That's the way I want to suggest it is to be seen, a thank you note, an appreciative acknowledgement of a wise and godly wife. A husband writes an inspired poem to his godly wife, and he is saying, in effect, you live out the wisdom of God in our home. I see God's wisdom embodied in our home in you. You are the A to Z. I mean, he uses, you know, the acrostic A to Z. You are the A to Z of wisdom in our home. Now, I remind you that this is at the end of the book of Proverbs. It's important for us to think about that as we try to understand this poem. And I think that it's amazing and fitting that while much of the language is Proverbs is addressed to young men to train them for a wise and godly life, the book concludes with a woman who personifies wisdom in the way she lives at home. And it's something to think about all of her qualities and to think about all of the qualities of wisdom and how they're seen in her. I mean, wisdom is trustworthy. She is trustworthy. Wisdom is valuable, more valuable than gold or silver, we read in Proverbs 16:16. Well, look at this poem. Look at verse 10. She is worth far more than rubies. How valuable she is. Wisdom, the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord, and she fears the Lord. Verse 30. So again and again you see this, and wisdom is hardworking, and she is hardworking as well. It's proverbial in our own culture. Mother's work is never done. Every other Wednesday we have MOPS moms meeting here. And sometimes, you know, I see a MOPS mom getting out of a car. She has an infant on her back. She has a toddler that she's carrying or with her, guiding. She has a diaper bag. She has something she's bringing in to share to eat. And, you know, I say to her, well, can I help? She says, no, I got it. You know, it's as if she has, well, she can do it all. Multitasking comes so naturally to her. It's amazing. Let me read to you a description of the creation of the woman, a conversation between God and an angel that I read this last week. By the time the Lord made mothers, he was into the sixth day, working overtime. An angel asked, why are you spending so much time on this one? And the Lord said, have you read the spec sheet on her? She has to be completely washable, but not plastic. Run on black coffee and leftovers. Have a lap that can hold three kids at a time and that disappears when she stands up. Have a kiss that can cure anything from a scraped knee to a broken heart. And have six pairs of hands. Six pairs of hands? No way, said the angel. The Lord replied, oh, it's not the hands that are the problem. It's the three pairs of eyes mothers must have. And that's on the standard model, the angel asked. The Lord nodded. Yep. One pair of eyes are to see through the closed door as she asks the children what they are doing, even though she already knows. Another pair in the back of the head to see what she needs to know, even though no one thinks she can. And the third pair are here in the front of her head. They are for looking at an errant child and saying she understands and loves him, even without saying a word. The angel tried to stop the Lord. This is too much work for one day. Wait until tomorrow to finish. No, I am so close to finishing this creation that is so close to my own heart. She already heals herself when she's sick and can feed a family of six and a pound of hamburger and can get a 9-year-old to stand in the shower. The angel moved closer and touched the woman. But you've made her so soft, Lord. She is soft, the Lord agreed, but I have also made her tough. You have no idea what she can endure or accomplish. The angel then noticed something and reached out and touched the woman's cheek. Oops! Looks like you have a leak with this model. I told you you were trying to put too much into this one. That's not a leak. The Lord said, that's a tear. What's the tear for? Asked the angel. Well, the Lord said the tear is her way of expressing her joy, her sorrow, her disappointment, her pain, her loneliness, her grief, and her pride. The angel was impressed. You thought of everything for this one. You even created the tear. The Lord smiled and said, I created the woman. She created the tear. Interesting. As I often do when I prepare a message, I looked in my file and I found a message that I preached on Mother's Day a little over 20 years ago. And I thought I'd like to read a portion of what I wrote or what I said at that time. In our house, we have two genuine certified card-carrying kids. Before they were born, we prayed for normal kids and we got them. Our 6-year-old son believes he can run faster than the speed of sound. And he goes around the house trying to prove it. What was that, you say? Well, it was Jonathan. Whoop, watch out, here he comes again. He enjoys standing on his head, working with mud, which is a real specialty. He likes worms and crayfish. He collects rocks and sticks. And he's an expert on bloody knees. He enjoys seeing what's inside things. Give that boy anything, and he can take it apart. We gave him a little watch for Christmas. One day I found him under the dining room table, and the watch was taken apart in his busy little hands. Oh, don't worry, Dad. I took Jeffrey's apart, too, he told me. It can go back together. Our 3-year-old excels in verbal skills. She can ask for a fruit roll-up 850 times between breakfast at 8 and lunch at noon. And she has at least 78 ways to stall going to bed at night. This last Sunday night, at about 9:30 at night, I went up to check. This is a 3-year-old. I went up to check. Her light was still on. I found her arranging her dolls in a row, and she was talking to them. This plethora of words wears an adult down. We men just do not appreciate the tremendous drain on her emotional energy. And then I went on to say that one of my wife's greatest joys is to be away for a few hours and to find that after I have put the kids to bed, she finds that I haven't picked up the house, I haven't done the dishes, and she finds me prone on the couch near exhaustion. She finds a certain perverse joy in finding me in that condition. Well, that's what I wrote about 20 years ago, and that expresses what is being said in this poem. So often our wives are using strong arms to clean the house and heft kids and groceries, but also nimble fingers and quick minds to hammer keyboards, to work in schools, in hospitals, in offices, or in their own enterprises, their own businesses. Many work in the home and outside the home. And single moms have no choice. They must work in the home and outside the home. And single moms, you know, they're really heroes. They really deserve our appreciation, our praise, our thanks, our special consideration. Well, this woman is that woman. She is a woman who works hard and cares for her family, and she's generous to those in need, verse 20. That's because the love of God lives in her and reaches out to others. So what is the source? What is the source for this godly woman? What is the source of her life? And the source of the wise words that come from her mouth? Notice that in verse 26, she speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. What is the source? The source is in verse 30. It says that she fears the Lord. Proverbs concludes as it began. The book of Proverbs began by saying, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And the book of Proverbs concludes with a woman who fears the Lord and shows godly living at home. The fear of the Lord is simply the Old Testament expression for reverencing God and living a life of personal relationship with Him that results in a life of obedience to His commands. It's equivalent to knowing God and loving God. And so the godly wife cultivates her relationship with Christ. Christ lives in her. It is Christ living in her that presents this wisdom, this caring for others, this sacrifice, and the beauty that radiates from her life. It is He who is the source of her life. She meditates on Christ's love. She meditates on Christ's sacrifice, His cross, His resurrection, His power, the personality of the Spirit living in her life. Notice that the text says in verse 30 that charm school can be deceptive and beauty short-lived. The word that is used here, translated in the NIV, fleeting, is the same word that's used in Ecclesiastes when it says it's vain. You know, it's here and it's gone in just an instant. Now, the author does not say that beauty is bad. Matter of fact, there are a number of passages in the Bible where beauty, the beautiful woman, is mentioned. I mean, think of Rachel in the Old Testament. She was a beautiful woman, it says. Or Job's daughters are praised as the most beautiful women in the land. So beauty is not bad. The only point here is that beauty does not last. And it is nothing. The real point is that it is nothing compared to the beauty of heart and soul, the beauty of the person who loves God. You know, we live in a culture that makes the God of the body beautiful. And tragically, some women, sort of lured into that, do everything from surgery to starvation to try to reach misguided, terribly misguided goals or ideals. Do not fall for this. Do not fall for this. The Bible says the Lord does not look at things as man looks at them. The Lord, or man, looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. That was what God said to Samuel as David was chosen to be king. And so the passage indicates that this godly woman is beautiful in a beauty that is far more important than mere physical beauty. How do we respond to this passage? What ought we do in response? First of all, appreciate mom. This poem reminds us to express our thanks for the impact of her love, for the joy of her influence and her service and her work. We want to avoid the wrong of taking for granted those who are closest to us. Now, a card and dinner out on Mother's Day is very good and very appropriate, but certainly cannot replace 365 days constantly noticing, constantly appreciating, constantly saying, "Honey, thank you. I appreciate you so much, and I thank God for you." All the time. Second way to respond, sort of addressed first of all to the women and also to the men. Do not work all the time. Manage your time. Remembering to make room to dance, to have time for a hobby, for fun. If your spouse is a godly person, but really a workaholic, encourage balance in her life. You know, take her out for ice cream. Take her for a picnic or for a bike ride. Take her out to dinner. At 9 o'clock at night, insist that all the work stop and you sit down and have a cup of tea and just talk. And men, let's help. Let's help her. I mean, this is a description, a tiring description of all the things that she's doing, keeping care of the kids in the house. Let's help. It's very important that we men be, counted on to do certain things around the house, whether it's washing windows or washing floors or doing the lawn or whatever it is. We need to be there with our sleeves rolled up, helping too. Third way to apply this passage. Now I'm speaking to young women. Aspire to be a godly woman. As you plan your wife, as you plan your life, I intended to say. As you plan your life, take your counsel from the wisdom of God, not from the folly of our culture. Britney Spears is not your example. The beauty of heart and mind that loves God far surpasses all of that. Far surpasses the importance of physical appearance. Notice what it says in verse 10. She is worth far more than rubies. Aspire to be a godly woman. And young men, the very first thing you should seek in a wife is a godly woman. Fourth way to respond to this passage applies to all of us, and that is to nourish your relationship with God. Christ is the source of wisdom and of integrity and of diligence and love within us all. Remember that when Mary and Martha were with Jesus, Jesus singled out Mary as one who is sitting at his feet, as the one who is chosen the more important. So let us all nourish our relationship with God, with Christ. He is the one who makes godly living possible. Notice how the poem begins. Very first line. A wife of noble character. You know, who can find her? Where do you find this woman? I'd like you to turn back to chapter 19, verse 14. Chapter 19, verse 14. And the answer is given here. In 19, verse 14, we read these words. Houses and wealth are inherited from parents, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. The original places real emphasis on the word, the Lord. The Lord is the source. The Lord is the giver of a prudent wife. So, as you thank her, thank God too. He is the one who's given her to you.